A little bit about me. Some of you already know who I am, what I do. My journey into the technical communication world in general was that I spent 4 years out of college absolutely miserable in what I was doing for a living. I was a high school English teacher because the only thing anybody ever told me to do, because I liked to write, was to become a high school English teacher. And I wanted to be a teacher and I wanted to write, but I ended up hating the job. And fast forward 4 years, did a little remedial education in computer science so that I could at least understand what computer science was about, landed a contract job in as a tech writer, and eventually got picked up full-time as a tech writer and was a captive tech writer for about 11 years. And then I started my own business. So I've been in business for a long time. I'm 63 years old, and when I was 51, I said to my husband, I work from home, but I said to my husband, I don't know how I can keep doing this. I am so bored. I was using RoboHelp. I was using Word. I'm just so tired of writing yet another procedure on how to save a file. Really bored. And I was also very angry at Macromedia, who acquired RoboHelp from eHelp Corporation. And I was very unhappy with how they treated the RoboHelp users. And when I started hearing about Flare coming out and that it was a new product being developed by the old eHelp folks, I was going to jump on the bandwagon. And I bought my first license of Flare the second day it was on the market. And then I spent 2 years trying to figure out how the hell to make it work. I struggled. I did not grok it. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't understand it. You know, when I used RoboHelp, I never really had to pay attention to the CSS. I used inline formatting all the time because RoboHelp nobody was saying don't do that. It's not a good thing. But after a couple of years and after getting some Flare training, the light bulb started to go on over my head. Fast forward to however many years later this is now, 13 or 14 years later, I'm now at the point in my career where I'm a consultant. I'm going around and helping companies adopt this tool, train their writers, figure out how to migrate their content from their legacy tools into Flare, how to optimize their content so that it can produce new things that they originally didn't envision it was going to create. And it has totally reinvigorated my career, and it has totally reinvigorated my passion for being in this community. And I'm passionate about all of us teaching and learning from each other. Teaching each other and learning from each other. So that's why I'm here. My passion is this community. My passion is not so much Flare the tool. It's all of you. So that's my little spiel about me. I skipped that yesterday because I had too many slides in that presentation. All right. This is not going to be a case study. I'm not going to show you the particular project that I went into a deep dive analyzing, but I'm going to tell you the story of that project and the kind of things that my analysis efforts yielded and why it was very important that my client understand how seriously in need of fixing their project was in order for them to then continue to carry on with the work they wanted to do with that. So this will be my story of some of my clients' projects and maybe a few of my own too. Now, I'm of the philosophy that we are engaged in a conversation today, so I would like you to ask questions as we go. I don't want you to feel you have to wait until the end of the session, because by the time we get to the end of the session, you will have forgotten your question. Now, when you ask the question, be prepared for me to say one of three things. One is, I'll answer the question right there. Another is, I know I'm going to be answering that question in a couple of minutes, so hold on. A third is, I may say, I don't know. That's interesting. Let's talk about it later over in the tech support lounge and figure out if we can answer your question. But please feel free to ask questions as we go. Feel free to just go, yo, Nita, if I don't happen to see you with your hand up. All right, why do we want to analyze our FLAIR projects? I believe very strongly that we have a professional obligation to be good stewards of the stuff that we create for our companies, for our clients, for our organizations. I call those the things that we create collectively corporate assets. We are creating corporate assets that our companies, clients, organizations paid good hard money for in terms of tools, in terms of salary, in terms of all the overhead that goes into employing you to do your stuff. So you have an obligation to make sure that you are a good steward of that content. Why we want to analyze our projects in particular is the very first one I've got there to improve FLAIR's performance, that came out of a request from one of my clients who said, we know something is seriously wrong with our project. For example, if we change the name of a file, you know how FLAIR will pop up that window that asks you if you want to update links? They would wait 15 minutes for that window to be populated. And that didn't have to do with the horsepower of their computers. It had something fundamentally to do with all the crud that was in their FLAIR project that FLAIR was trying to figure out and calculate before it could then populate that window. I believe also we need to analyze our projects so that we can promote our work's longevity and so that we can promote its extensibility. What do I mean by extensibility? I have some clients who begin their FLAIR projects only focused on creating PDF. And then sometime down the road, they realize we also now want to do HTML5 output. So sometimes the way that they have crafted their content is so PDF-centric that it becomes very difficult for them to then be able to extend it to creating these other kinds of outputs. And they have to do a lot of retrofitting. If they could have avoided all of that sort of short-term, make it work now, and had thought more long-term, they would have been in a better position. And analysis can help us figure some of that stuff out. Also, we'd like to promote authoring efficiencies. I'm a big proponent of this as well, that especially if you design a FLAIR project or you're trying to clean up a legacy project, think about how you can make these projects, how you can improve them so that you make the authoring experience for your authors just more efficient. So I like to talk about getting the FLAIR user interface out of the way so that writers can get back to writing and not have to be fussing with all kinds of things. Of course, we also want to improve the quality of our generated content. Hey, if we do some analysis and the analysis tells us we've got 252 topics that contain tracked changes that have never been accepted, that means those tracked changes are never showing up in the output. There's a problem with the quality, with the content we're publishing. I'm going to talk more about that example in a little bit. And finally, analysis can help us do some things that can assist us in optimizing our content and getting it ready for localization. I am not a localization expert, but I try as an author at least to know enough about localization to prep my content correctly so that the localizer professionals do know how to work with it then. All right, so it's not enough to just use FLAIR's analysis tools to gather your analysis data. You then have to act on what you learn. And my advice, especially if you have an older project that has a lot of crud in it, such as the project I'm going to describe shortly, you're not going to be able to improve that project in one fell swoop. It may take you much longer than a week. It may take you longer than 6 months to truly clean out everything, you know, everything you have to do to improve that project. So I believe that we authors need to commit to continuous improvement. I have one client I'm working with that they have quarterly releases. They develop a web-based software application. They have updates come out quarterly. My recommendation to them is that we do an analysis activity and we set a housekeeping plan and we do that every quarter so that we're constantly improving our work. Neglecting your project housekeeping, it will incur costs. My client, with the gigantic, crud-filled project, spent good, hard consulting dollars. They paid for about 3 weeks of my time and they flew me to Europe to spend a week with them. So they spent a lot of money, and what we were doing is helping them do stuff they should have been doing all along. So rather than incur those costs in the long term and also have output to your users that might end up having a lot of flaws in it, commit to this kind of continuous improvement. All right, so let's talk about where Flair holds its analysis data. Some of you, this is probably, you already know this. Others of you, this might be new. If we look in Windows Explorer, or now I guess in Windows 10, it's called File Explorer, we're going to see that a Flair project has four folders in it. Two of those folders, the content folder, that's your content explorer that has all of your topics and snippets and your images. And then there's the project that holds your targets and your talks. The output folder, that's obviously when Flair builds output, that's where it's going to put it, unless you tell it to put it someplace else. It'll put it there by default. But there's also this thing called the analyzer folder. When you first create a Flair project, Flair will build this analyzer folder, and I think it's an SQL database. I'm not an SQL person, but I think it's an SQL database. And it maintains the dependencies between all of your files. So, for example, if you have a snippet that is placed in three topics, the analysis database knows that there's a dependency between those four files. If you have a target that is connected to a particular talk and that is set up with certain conditions, the analysis folder, that database knows about those dependencies between things. When you change a file name and up comes that window that says, do you want to update links? All that data is stored in this analysis folder. Now, let me go off on a tangent for a brief moment. If ever, by the way, you have changed a file name and Flair ceases to update, to prompt you to update links, that is a sure indication that your analysis database has gotten corrupted. So how do you fix that? Close the Flair project, delete the analyzer folder, delete it outright. And I'm telling you exactly what the people over in tech support will tell you to do. Delete the analyzer folder. Start Flair up again, and Flair will reproduce a fresh copy of the database. It will scan your whole project. It will analyze your whole project, and now you're good to go. I had a client once who spent an afternoon changing file names, moving them to different locations. He spent about 4 hours, and he called me up, and he said, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, when I started earlier today, Flair kept prompting me if I wanted to update links, and it's not prompting me anymore. And I said, how long have you been not getting this prompt? He goes, well, it's been about 3 hours. I said, okay, you're going to have a slew of broken links, and let me help you fix those. And I said, in future, if Flair ever stops prompting you to update links, stop, get out of Flare, delete that folder, open up Flare, and then you're good to go again. Okay, so formerly, Flare, I'm actually going to show you Flare 20R27, or 2018R2.
Yeah.
Yes?
We have our Flare project files on a network drive location, and I've been told by Madcap Tech Support that we can't find that analyzer folder because it doesn't exist if that's the case. Weird, huh? Is that a problem if that analyzer folder isn't present? Because I know a lot of troubleshooting steps start or at least contain the
Let me. All right, so his question was, you and your colleagues are keeping a Flare project on a network drive. I'm going to assume that you are co-authoring that project?
Yes.
That is not a best practice.
No.
Okay. So my first advice to you, consultant to friend here, try to find a way to stop doing that. So he said that they can't find the Flare can't find the analyzer folder on the network drive. Was that your question?
That's right.
I've never heard of that before. I don't know. So I think whatever they're telling you in tech support is more than what I know to tell you. I just know to tell you if you're co-authoring with other Flare authors, you should be using source control. That's a whole other conversation that we could try another time. All right? Yeah. Don't have shared projects on a network drive. All right, here's where I'm going to try to go out to. So John has told me I press Alt first, then go Tab. I want to go to Flare. Okay. We're looking at the project that I wrote years and years and years ago to get my certification. So this project is from like 2009. I haven't looked at it forever, but I thought it would be something that I could at least demonstrate because I cannot show you my client's CRUD-filled project because it's proprietary. Flare used to and still does have on the project organizer, there is a folder called reports. Can everybody in the back of the room see that? Okay. So let's say I want to see if I have any broken links and broken XREFs in my Flare project. I've always been able to add a report, and there's one here that is even for critical issues. I'll go ahead and select that one. I'll call this critical. And then Flare gives me a whole bunch of different checkboxes. We can see one here says broken bookmarks. We have another one if I go down to links. We will have broken links. And I believe that the broken links is going to give us broken cross-references as well. And then I can say generate that report. Now, my project is perfect. We're probably not going to get any broken links, but maybe we will. So we did get some hits down here. Let's see. Oh, look, no broken bookmarks, no broken links, no broken snippets. I told you I have a pristine project here. But my point is just demonstrating that you could get this report, but this is just a flat report. It's not dynamic. If I did have a broken link there, I would at least see the name of the file that had the broken link in it, but then I would have to go and find that file and figure out what the problem was. I could also open up this report in a browser window, and if I had some stuff there, I could always print that out. Now I've got a printout of my issues. All right, what I'm showing you here with these reports have been in Flare, I don't know if since Flare 1, but at least since maybe Flare 4.2. What they've done now is, all of this data is coming from the analyzer database. What they've done now is that they've added in some more dynamic functionality into Flare, and that's what I want to show you. Let me do Alt this and go back to that. Did it work? Good. So something else that we used to have in Flare, actually, I can't go back because that would be an earlier one. Flare, however, besides all those reports that I showed you, that FLAIR also had this very small list of dynamic reports that we could have done: broken links, broken bookmarks, files with changes. Oh, all right, those are with track changes. Files with annotations. Is there anybody here who doesn't know what an annotation is in FLAIR? Okay, everybody knows what an annotation is. Okay. But that was it. We either had to run a report or we could run this very short set of things. Now we have a whole ribbon full of analysis functionality that's going to let us do some deep diving into our projects to see what their state, what their health is. And what I mean by dynamic is that once we run the report, we can then drill down and get to the exact file that has the problem. And in some cases, FLAIR will even suggest to us how to fix the problem. So FLAIR really is, in my view, trying to help us do our work, not just pointing us to where the problem is, but actually help us fix it. So the first thing you're going to do in a FLAIR project is you're going to run the, on the analysis ribbon, run the summary. So if I go back to my project, let me close out of the browser. So I'm going to close a whole bunch of windows. Let me just close windows. I'm going to go to the analysis ribbon, and I'm going to run the summary. And FLAIR is going to take a few moments, and it's going to check a whole bunch of stuff. And actually, stuff here doesn't look too bad. I don't have anything red. I don't have anything telling me that I've got some broken links. I do have some unused styles, so that may be something I want to take a look at sometime. But I want to now show you the summary for my client's project. So, whoops, my client's project. I know you can't yet read that, but there were two red things up at the top about broken links and broken bookmarks. And there were some other things that were starting to be concerning. A little ways down, you see it says files with annotations. That's a pretty big number next to file with annotation. So here's more of the details. So obviously, at first, I've got to look at why they have 554 broken links in their project and 219 broken bookmarks. That immediately is a red flag for me, literally and figuratively. All right, we've got to go and investigate that, because that hurts their output, because they're going to have links that are dead, links that don't work. But this one that says files with changes and files with annotations, this one was very alarming to me. By the way, I think this is a little misleading. It's not that we have 841 files with changes. It's that we have 841 tracked changes in I don't know how many files. Okay? Similarly, with the files with annotations, we don't have 42,399 files with annotations. We have 42,399 annotations in the files. I hope I'm not jumping ahead, but I'm going to tell this little story up now about why this stood out to me so much. So I'm talking with my client when they flew me over to Belgium, and I met with them, and I'm asking them about, you know, how their operation works. And they told me a story about how they're using Contributor for reviews. And they're using it in a really unique way. In fact, I've encouraged them to make a proposal with MadCap to do a session maybe at the European version of Mad World. And that is, they are keeping their FLAIR projects in GitHub, and then they have some contributor floating licenses. I think they have like 10 floating licenses. This predates Central. This FLAIR project has been in existence for about 6 years, okay, maybe even longer. And in fact, it used to be a bunch of RoboHelp projects, so maybe it's even 8 years or more that they've had this FLAIR project. So the way they do their reviews is the software developers, because they know how to use GitHub, they do a pull request. They pull the topics they want to make changes in. They use Contributor to make the changes. Then they push those back into, they commit those back into GitHub. And once a week, the technical writer And there's only one tech writer to like 15 developers, and she's awesome trying to keep, you know, keep up with these guys and gals. But once a week, she will make sure that she pulls everything out of GitHub, so she's now got all those Flare topics, you know, that have been updated by the developers in her project. Does anybody see a problem that analysis told us here? There are 841 changes that are in an unaccepted state. They are changes that are in the Flare files that the tech writer never went into and did accept or reject. So if there are changes in a Flare project, in a Flare topic that have not been handled by the writer, have not been accepted, they don't show up in output. So there are all these changes that developers are making that aren't making it into the online help. Yes, a question.
Will they show up in output, for example, if your output is picking up and you choose to preserve track changes, they'll show up in output?
They're producing HTML5 top nav output. That's their output. So these changes are not making it into output. And by the way, this is API documentation. All right? So this means there are technical changes for other developers that aren't making it into the HTML5 knowledge base. So then I started looking at the annotations. And I found that many of these annotations were in those same topics, and they were written by the same subject matter experts to explain to the author, to the tech writer, something about why this change was being made. So then I started looking at the date stamps on those annotations. 2014. 2015. So there were technical changes that were being made 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 3 years ago, that were not present in the output. Big problem. This is one of the things that Analyzer, I still call it Analyzer, sorry, Analyzer used to be a separate tool, now it's built in. This is part of what Flare's analysis was able to help us identify. We also had some other issues we wanted to look at. In particular, you'll see there that we had some unused content file. I wanted to know why there were 2,800 unused content files. My philosophy is, I started reading Marie Kondo's book, by the way. If any of you have been reading Marie Kondo's book, one of her things is, she talks about finish discarding first. And so here it's like, look, if you've got old crud, I don't have a, by the way, when I say crud, I have a different word in my head, but I'm trying to be clean here. So if you've got this crud in your project, you've got almost 3,000 unused files, go figure out if you really need those anymore. And if you don't need them, if they're truly obsolete, if they're truly old, get them out of the project, because they are adding to that overhead. They are adding to that analyzer database, so that when Flare is trying to do its scan and its analysis and tell you about updating links, you know, you're giving Flare a whole hell of a lot of stuff to churn through. All right, a lot on that. We have some other worrisome things. Look at the second one. Undefined condition tags. 1,500! 1,500 undefined condition tags. I'll tell you the story of that. This is one giant Flare project that originally was about 35 RoboHelp projects. And all they did was they kept sucking in RoboHelp projects. And each one of those RoboHelp projects had their own condition tag sets, some of them slightly different condition tags. They never did any post-cleanup, you know, post-import cleanup. So they've got topics in their project that have all these undefined condition tags. I would bet some of those are in some of those files that are not being used, that once we get rid of, you know, we discard the crud we don't need anymore. That'll cut down on that. We also have some other things there that we need to start addressing. The one in the middle that says non-XML topics, 5. Now, there are only 5 of them. If you ever get something that says it's a non-XML topic, that most likely means that it is an HTML file, but it's got some faulty code in it. So if you try to open that file, Flair will tell you, I can't open this in the XML editor. Do you want to open it in the text editor? And when it gives you that prompt, it will also tell you, I can't open this because there's a lousy character on line 39 in character position 52. It'll even tell you where the problem is. All right, so we need to look at that. Why do we have some non-topic files? And then we have some other things, duplicate talk items, duplicate style formats that we really needed to look at. So now I wanted to just give you some, how am I doing for time? I'm doing pretty slow. I think I need to actually pick up the pace. So here's marching our way down the analysis ribbon. The next thing is links, and we can look at different kind of link analyses. These are the analyses that have always been built into Flair. Remember I said there was a short set of dynamic analyses. But I wanted to talk about the broken links in particular. So I ran broken links. Flair gave me this broken link window with a whole list of things. It showed me the file that had the broken link. It told me what was wrong with it. And here it's saying it's missing the file it's trying to find. And the link text is trying to find a topic whose name is, well, the link text says lot snapshot. And it's looking for an HTM file. Well, what was cool about this is if I could drill down into the topic, I can just double-click to the topic right from here, and I could locate where that broken link is, and then I could fix it manually. But if this topic, let's say, is quite long, I've got to eyeball, you know, down into the topic until I find lot snapshot and say, oh, okay, that's the one I got to fix. Flair now helps us a little drill down to that a little bit more easily. So I still have that item selected here. I realize I cut it off. There's a button here that says open the fix broken links dialog. So Flair opened up this dialog. I clicked on this button, which I think is called find me a candidate to fix this broken link. Well, lo and behold, Flair found an HTM file of the name that it needed to find. It's just that the path to that thing was wrong. Okay, probably what happened is that file got moved at some point, but it, because they had problems with, you know, getting the update link thing to populate over 15 minutes, they would cancel it, so now they've got a broken link. I could right here say, yes, select that, okay, and then now Flair has fixed my broken link. I didn't even have to go down into the topic itself. Flair fixed it for me. Now, my client had 515 broken links, and I told her, I'm sorry, you've got to suck it up and you've got to go fix those broken links. So Flair can help you find it, but you have to fix these things. All right, questions on that before I move on? Yes?
What about projects that you're in? So we import from another larger project. We don't use all those topics, but some of those topics have links to other topics that we don't use, so it shows up as broken, a broken link, if we don't download them. So how do you resolve those?
So the question that our friend has asked is, what if we have imported something from another project, and when you have imported, it sounds like you have not told Flair, import these files and anything they're linked to?
We tried that. The problem is it imports like 2,000.
Right. All right. So you tried saying yes to that, but it brought in too many things. So now you have stuff that you've imported that it's still pointing back to those old things. Again, you could do this broken link analysis. Flair's not going to find a potential fix for you, but it will at least identify for you where all the breaks are, and then you've just got to go and work all of the. Whenever you do an import, I don't care if you're importing from a Flair project, whether you're importing from FrameMaker, from Word, from RoboHelp, you're always going to have pre-import work to do and post-import work to do. All right, so now I want to talk about some advanced things. So not only can Flair help you find problems with your project, Flair can help you optimize your content. And one of the things, and there are these things in the options dialog. So you file, options, go to the project analysis, and there are all these various scan options. Never turn all of these on at the same time, because that is going to grind Flare down to a halt. And if you have a project like the one I was dealing with, which had years worth of CRUD in it, it was just unmanageable. So I selectively turn these things on and off. There are also some additional things at the bottom that are called performance options. Let's say one of the things you want Flare to do is help you find all your instances of inline formatting. Maybe you've got a lot of instances of inline formatting because you've got a really cruddy project that you brought in from RoboHelp. You can say to Flare, only look through 500 topics at a time, or only look through 1,000 topics at a time. You know, don't look through the whole project at a time, because Flare will grind to a halt. So you can do things in a more stepwise or chunked down fashion. So we're going to turn on a couple of things. So as I say here, the next thing we're going to is suggestions. And in order for you to use analyze the analysis suggestions, you're going to turn on or off some of those scan options that I just mentioned. So let's take a look at a couple of these things. Accessibility suggestions. And I just did this for one of my clients. My client's knowledge base was run through a tool that ended up spitting out a 70-page report of all of our failures for ADA compliance. One of the things, for example, was that we were missing alt text for images. Another was that we were missing captions for tables or summaries for tables. So you can use this analysis, so it's on the analysis ribbon, suggestions, accessibility suggestions, and you can also set the search properties so that you can tell Flare exactly what it is you want to look at any given time. If all you want to look at it has to do with tables, for example, clear all the other things that aren't relevant to just trying to figure out what you need to do with tables. Now, this one is one of my favorites. Frequent segments and similar segments. Frequent segments are segments of text. It might be a sentence. It might be, let's say you have a bulleted list and each bullet has, you know, just a handful of words, not complete sentences. But each of those things is considered a segment. Luciana, do I have this right, the way I'm describing a segment? Okay, segments are very important to localizers because localization is done on a segment-by-segment basis. So what I like about frequent and similar segments is I can run the frequent segments analysis, and I need to make sure, by the way, I turn on that scan to gather frequent segment things to look for. I can say, find me all the instances of 100% character for character matches. Because what should I do then? I hear it. Got to be louder. Snippetize it. Take that content, turn it into snippets. So Flare can help you find all that repeating content that you can then put into a snippet. Imagine this. Say you've got a 10-word sentence, and localizers typically charge you by the word. If Flare finds 50 instances of those 10 words, so that's how many words? 500? Am I doing my math right? I am not a math person. 500? So now we have 500 words. Do you want to pay for them to translate 500 words or 10 words? Do I have this right, Luciana? I do. Okay. So use these analysis tools to help you find these frequent segments and then turn them into snippets. Another thing you could do is look for similar segments. Similar segments means they're not exactly 100% the same, but they're really close. So you might use that again to snippetize, because maybe you want to make your word, your phrasing more uniform. Or it can help you find just variations of how, maybe especially if you're working in a team, one writer wrote it one way, another writer wrote it a slightly different way, and they really should be written the same way for consistency. Now, notice here that there's this little thing that says create a snippet. Once Flair finds all those things for you, you can actually have Flair automatically create the snippet for you and then automatically put that snippet in place of all of that other live text. So you don't even have to go and find those other 49 instances of where that content was used. Yes, question. That's coming next. So that's one of those questions of hold that question. Okay. So this is my bonus slide. This is why I call this the director's cut, because I realized earlier today, oh my goodness, I need to also talk about something else having to do with snippets, and then with variables will be the next slide. So I just explained a situation where we had a whole bunch of different instances of live text, and we told Flair found those for us, and we created a snippet, and now we use that snippet everywhere. Let's say we already have a snippet, and we also, though, have live instances of all that same content. We can run another analysis that is called collect. Well, we turn on the scan option called collect snippet prospects, and then the analysis is Flair will find all the instances of live text that matches a snippet that we already have. And then Flair will prompt us and say, do you want to turn this into a snippet? And we say, yes. All we have to do is say, apply. And now it makes all those, it replaces all of that live text with snippets. Similarly, with variables. So if we have an existing variable, let's say for our product name, and we find that some of our teammates have been live texting the product name instead of using the product name variable. You can run this analysis with the analysis functionality. It will find all those live text instances, and then you can quickly replace those with the variables. Okay, markup suggestions. I have to stand up, by the way. I got tired of sitting. So, markup suggestions. Sometimes when people copy and paste stuff, especially from Microsoft Word, if you go and look at that content in the internal text editor, you'll see that there's a whole slew of extra spaces. There may be a whole slew of extra blank lines. And the problem with having all that in your code, that's, you know, in the markup side of your topic, especially if you're going to be producing, let's say, HTML5 output, that stuff is going to still be there in the code of that topic. And your browser has to spend a little bit of time sort of identifying where all that stuff is so that it can then ignore it when it loads the page. So if you want to increase the load times of your HTML pages in your HTML5 output, get rid of all that kind of extra spaces and things in the code side of your topic. Now, a word of caution. Many of you are probably including code samples because you're documenting software. You include code samples. Sometimes code samples, which are nested in what's called a pre-tag, which is short for pre-formatted text, usually people put them in pre-formatted text because we want there to be five spaces. Whereas what the browser would do if we did not have it in that pre-tag, the browser would say, I see five spaces, I'm going to show one. You do not want Flair to clean up the markup of any of the stuff you have in a pre-tag. Yes? Oh, thank you for the heads up. Thank you, my friend. So I got 15 minutes to go. Let's see how we do. Okay. Inline style suggestions. So this is where you can run this analysis, and Flair will find you every single file that has examples of inline formatting. There are some additional things, though, here in that Flair could also say, hey, do you want to create some styles for some of this? And once you create the style, Flair will then automatically apply that style in place of the inline formatting. I know everybody's typing so furiously, and I'm like, it's all in the PDF. There is a PDF of the presentation. Okay. Undefined items. So this was a good one to run, especially for my client. Remember I said they had 591 undefined condition tags? I was able to run some of these analyses to figure out where their problems were. I'm going to kind of go a little faster now because I want to get to some other good stuff at the end. Used items. So with used items is where if you want to know where are certain things actually being used. The reason I said my favorite question mark, I don't use this very often, but I heard a story today from a MadCap tech support person who was telling a story that a fellow asked him about, how can I run a report on all of the places where my file tags are being used? And he told him about this particular thing in the analysis ribbon. And then later he went by, the guy had his computer open, went by to see how he was doing. And he realized that what this guy was doing was he was actually doing one of those reports, which is just that flat file I told you about. And then he jumped and he said, no, don't do the report. Go to the analysis ribbon, do it here, because then you're going to get a list of files that you, if you wanted to then dive into those files, you could. All right, my favorites for finding problems. First one there, files with annotations and changes for that particular client. Duplicate style formats, that may be where we have, I think what duplicate style formats is that we may have slightly differently named styles, but they have the identical definitions. So is there a way that you could, in your style sheet, combine those into just one style instead of having two styles that were essentially doing exactly the same thing? Topics without concepts. I don't want to get into what concepts are used here for, except that if you're doing HTML5 output and you're using search filters, concepts are what you need to populate the search filters. So if you run this analysis, you can find where there are some topics that are missing the concept links and so won't end up being included in search properly. All right. I'm going to skip that. That was the files with annotations. But notice this. Oh, let me go back. Where was I? Look at this. Page 1 of 424 pages of files with annotations. That was that 42,399 hits. All right, there are some additional reports. You can find unused content files, unused file tags, unused styles, unused bookmarks. I would periodically run those things and then get rid of those unused things. Anything that you're not using, get rid of, because then you're not adding that to the overhead of Flair trying to keep scanning your project and maintaining that analysis database. All right, one of the things that I love doing is taking these various analyses that I run, and then I export the data to an Excel spreadsheet. I spent 1 week before I went to Belgium analyzing this project. In the end, I had 50 spreadsheets that identified all the various problems with my client's project. But I turned those spreadsheets also into something that she could use to track her progress so that as she was dealing with certain things, it would just help her keep her work organized. I want to make sure I have a picture of something. So one of the things I did is I ran an analysis of images. And in one case, I know you can barely see that, but because I put this in Excel, I was able to then make it into a sortable table. And when I sorted, I discovered that here I've got at the top, there are actually one, two, three, four. The first four images all have the same file name. They probably came in from RoboHelp that way. They're four different images in different locations in the project. And having them just be numbers like that is meaningless anyways. So one of my recommendations to the client was you need to rename some of your images so that they're easier for your users to maintain. But the second thing there I have about how 32 instances of the same image by the same name. They had 32 instances of their logo in the project. And they were using that logo in different places. And I'm like, why do you have 32 instances of exactly the same file? All right. At the very end, what I did as a consultant, I know you cannot read the fine print here, but at the very end, what I did as a consultant is I gave my client a comprehensive report, which I wrote in Flair, by the way, a comprehensive report that gave her an action plan. I told her what she needed to do immediately to, like, take care of those track changes that you never accepted, that never made it into your output for 5 years. And I'm amazed that nobody ever complained to them about their documentation not being up to date. The report was really comprehensive. What should you do immediately? What other things can you do short term? And then what things should you do long term? What things should you do on a quarterly basis? And then there are some things that are, if ever you have time, which of course you never will. We know how our jobs go. We never have time for the "it would be nice someday" things. But I did include some of those things. It would be nice. And that's the end. So we have time for questions. Yes?
I know this is a little off topic, but she had a lot of annotations.
Time out. I just realized they've told us there's a microphone here. Are you brave enough to speak into the microphone?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see if it works. If it doesn't work, I will repeat your question.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can't. So go ahead. Yeah, let's.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Okay, so my question is, she had a lot of files with annotations, and I wonder if you have a best practice for dealing with those, because I've gone into two companies now where they have a lot of annotations. And I know that creates some clutter and obviously creates a multi-page report if you're dealing with a lot of them. So do you have any suggestions for that?
I do have some suggestions, and it's just sort of my personal preference. I am not a purist, and I don't think that you should have a project with no annotations in it. Because when we're working in a team situation, we all often need to have annotations to our fellow authors. So my practice in that case is to leave an annotation for the benefit of my co-authors, and I always preface it by saying, "authors." And then I will say something, whatever it is, about that I want to bring to their attention. It's sort of like some internal knowledge we don't want to lose, but we minimize the use of that. So probably if I were to analyze the project that we have, which at this point probably has 15,000 files in it, not topic files, but you know, altogether, we'd probably have 100 annotations peppered throughout the project. But I'm a bigger advocate of documenting your project some other way, too. So you need to have project documentation. It could be a Flair project in its own right. It could be a Microsoft Word file that you keep right in the project. In many of the projects that I design, I always include a Flair topic called Authors Read Me. And that file has in it just this little cheat sheet of what this project is all about. This project supports this product, and this project produces these targets, and we use the condition tags this way. But it's very, very brief. We also have a more extensive maintenance guide that describes, you know, at a more detailed level how to maintain the project.
Yeah, what I find
All right. She said many of her authors are using the annotations to put in what JIRA ticket the update was associated with. An alternative maybe to using an annotation is to use what I call an author note. So I have a style in my style sheet. It's a generic style, so it's just dot author note. And I have it set up to have a yellow background. I also have it set up to be excluded from, I have a condition associated with it, so it's never going to show up in output. But it's prominent when the author opens up the topic, there it prominently says what it is, you know. In terms of a JIRA ticket or some other kind of system that you're using, you know, Bugzilla or whatever, I tend not to keep those kind of things right in my projects, right in my topics when the topics are complete, but that definitely goes into the comment when I check those changes into my source control system. Because I want to be able later to go into my source control system and search for that JIRA ticket number. Any other questions about analysis? Was this useful? Was this helpful? Okay. All right. I'm going to share a little secret about this. A year ago at Mad World, the CEO of Madcap, Anthony Olivier, came up to me and he said, I have an idea for a session. We need a session on the analysis tools in Flare. And I'm like, yeah, okay. He goes, why don't you propose that next year? So I submitted my proposal. So I wrote up my description and all this stuff. And then at the end I said, P.S. I said, if I can throw anybody's weight around, it would be Anthony's because he suggested this proposal, you know, this idea. Please select me. So I appreciate that you thought it was worthwhile. Thank you.